Our third case this morning is United States against Perez. This is a certified case. Counsel to the government, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am Captain Jason Califer, and I, along with Colonel Jared Bruce, represent the United States as appellant in this case. The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals correctly recognized the issue, and that issue was, as they stated, the central question in this case is whether there was legal prejudicial error or whether the convening authority was acting within its sole discretion as the convening authority in granting clemency. However, it is the position of the United States that the Air Force Court incorrectly concluded that the present instance involves legal error at the trial level and thereby incorrectly determined that the convening authority's actions were regulated by United States versus Sayles. It is the government's position that there was no legal error that occurred at trial, and that the convening authority was exercising his sole discretion to do, his clemency powers. Now, factually, how did we get here? Essentially, in July of 2005, there was a general court-martial at which the appellee was convicted. On 9 January, approximately 6 months later, the convening authority ordered a post-trial Article 39A. At that Article 39A, he was requesting that the judge determine two things. First of all, whether or not there existed credible evidence that after trial, the victim of the rape allegation or rape conviction had recanted her testimony. And then secondarily, if so, did it support evidence for a new trial? In mid-January, the military judge did hold that post-trial Article 39A. This was also after authentication, and answered both of the questions in the affirmative. Subsequent to that, there was a pre-clemency submitted by the appellee on 27 January. The stat judge advocate's recommendation then occurred shortly thereafter in March. And in the stat judge advocate's recommendation, he stated that while the finding as to the rape allegation should be dismissed, he believed that the punishment, including bad conduct discharge, was appropriate. And that was in contradiction to the recommendation of the military judge. Now, essentially, United States v. Sayles set forth some criteria that apply to the appellate courts. And essentially, it was that where a specification charge has been dismissed, the appellate court must not provide a sentence that is any greater than would have been provided at the trial level, absent the error. That's the Sayles criteria. Now, that Sayles criteria is explicitly noted within RCM 1107E. The Air Force Court turned to 1107E in support of the premise that, in this case, the committing authority should have abided by the Sayles criteria. However, what they did not do is note that the first sentence of 1107E specifically notes that that applies to remand cases. It's already gone to the appellate level. It's come back down.
You've made two arguments in your brief. One is that this was a clemency submission and not and the CA was doing clemency and was not reassessing in any event. And second, I think you're arguing an alternative that even if the CA was correcting a legal error, he's not required to do a reassessment. He can do whatever he wants. Do I have that second part correct?
No, sir.
So if he's correcting a legal error, what must the CA do?
He must abide by the criteria set out within United States versus Sayles.
So you're not making the argument that if he's in fact correcting a legal error, he can act like it's clemency?
I am not, sir. And I would.
So that turns us to your first argument. Looking at the recommendation that the SJA sent in on 2 March, that's what we're working off of, right?
Yes, sir, that is.
What was the SJA saying or meaning when he said, accordingly, the sentence must be reassessed?
Well, first of all, reassessment is not a term of art.
When I talk to my kids at night, I'm always saying, why don't we reassess whether you eat your spaghetti? It looks like a term of art. It's a term of art in the military justice system.
Well, if it is, then it is bantied about by all of the courts in a multitude of situations. I guess when I say it's not a term of art, what I mean is reassessment is not a term of art that applies only after after, only when the sales criteria must be applied. Reassessment does not equal applying the sales criteria. For instance, in this case, reassessment means...
Well, that sounds like you're saying when the CA reassesses, they can do whatever they want. I thought you just disavowed that statement.
No, sir. What I'm saying is the committing authority always has the obligation to provide or to make sure that the punishment or the sentence is appropriate. If the committing authority dismisses a charge, of course, he has an obligation to, I guess, re-look at it. While the term reassess was used, he has an obligation to re-look at what the individual is found guilty of and that the charge is, in fact, appropriate. So reassessment does not equate to applying the sales criteria.
Okay, I understand your argument. What about paragraph 11? These recommendations are subject to change pending submission of clemency matters or other response by the accused. If this is the clemency recommendation, why are they subject to change pending submission of clemency matters?
Well, I think because, first of all, that's an obligation. He's going to have, unusual to this case, one of the unusual factors was a pre-clemency, which you generally do not see. And in this case, a pre-clemency had been provided. So there was clemency provided prior to this SJAR. That is unusual. But in that pre-clemency, the defense counsel had requested, I believe, deferment of the fine, deferment of confinement, deferment of reduction, and noted, and we're going to be asking you to dismiss the charge of rape in our future clemency. So he was well aware, and as was provided by appellee, I believe, in the supplemental to the joint appendix, the committing authority responded to that. So he certainly had that information before him, as did the SJAR, because the SJAR specifically notes, I'm recommending all of this after having read the pre-clemency information.
How do we square any of this with Article 60?
Well, sir,
Article 60 says that the convening authority may do what he pleases other than raise the sentence in his sole discretion. The convening authority normally acts once. How do we know whether he's acting to correct error or in clemency or for mixed motives? How can we square any sort of judicially imposed limitations on convening authority action with the plain language of Article 60?
If the convening authority is acting as the convening authority, then...
Well, presumably he's not acting as anything else.
Well, not necessarily, sir. I would state that under... Well, RCM 1107E is essentially based off, and it applies that sales criteria, that appellate guideline, to the convening authority. And the reason it does that is because it says, it essentially is saying, look, when this case goes up to the appellate level, and then it comes back down because a charge has been dismissed, you're essentially now acting in the role of the appellate court. We're giving you options. You can dismiss and reassess, but you're doing what we would be doing. So therefore, you're bound by our guidelines. So in that case...
That's a regulation. 60 is a statute.
Understood, sir. And then the next step, however, is what Reed did in United States versus Reed in this court. It expands...
How do you square Reed with Article 60?
Well, Reed goes on to say, well, when you are curing a legal error, when you're doing that, you have now stepped into the shoes of the appellate court. You're only acting as a judicial economy. You're not acting in the role of clemency. And when you are doing that, then you are bound by the appellate guidelines, which would be United States versus Sales. However, you are not subject to judicial scrutiny when you are acting per clemency. Our argument is premised off the fact that there was no legal error here, despite the Air Force Court's summary statement that new evidence equals legal error. There was no legal error.
Mm-hmm. I know what your argument is. I'm pushing you further and saying, how do you square all of this judicial construction, and for that matter, the RCM, with the plain language of Article 60?
I'm sorry, sir.
You answered it.
Counsel, let's assume that the convening authority can do whatever he or she wants under Article 60. Does that bind an appellate court then with respect to correcting legal errors? That is, if the convening authority took the action in this case, and let's assume that there was a legal error in this case, and the convening authority's action, would that bind the appellate court in determining whether the sentence reduction was sufficient to correct any legal error?
If the convening authority dismissed the charge because he was acting as the convening authority for clemency, then yes, the charge has been dismissed. It wouldn't be appropriate for this court to say, well, you know what, we're going to dismiss it, the Air Force Court, we're going to dismiss it for another reason. But if he is acting as the appellate court, in a sense, by curing a legal error, then no, this court and the lower court.
Well, let's say the convening authority dismisses it for any reason. Let's say you have a marijuana charge, two years maximum, and you have another marijuana charge, 2 years maximum, and the individual gets a two-year sentence out of that. And the convening authority dismisses one of the charges and retains the sentence at 2 years. Does that preclude the appellate court from determining whether that was an appropriate sentence? Doesn't the appellate court have the Article 66C?
They have the ability to conduct an independent review. Yes,
that's right.
To determine whether
okay.
it was appropriate.
Now,
yes.
if the convening authority, after trial, the defense makes a motion to correct the legal error, and the convening authority decides to moot that legal error by dismissing the charge, does that preclude the appellate court from determining whether the convening authority's corrective action, whether it was done for clemency or any other purpose, was sufficient to correct the underlying legal error?
No, sir. It's all premised off of whether the convening authority was acting to cure the legal error or not.
Why does it make any difference? Why does that bind the appellate court? That is, let me ask a question a different way. Can a convening authority preclude an appellate court from correcting a legal error by dismissing a charge and not taking any corrective action with respect to the sentence?
If he's acting per clemency, then I would say yes. And the reason there's no prejudice or anything is because the court has the ability to make an independent determination on appropriateness.
Doesn't that then undermine the responsibility of the members to judge the sentence at trial? That is, when a sentence is adjudged at trial, it's based on the charged offenses. And if one of those charged offenses is then dismissed after trial, isn't there a question of whether there was prejudice as to the sentence?
I would disagree respectfully, sir, in that if it's done as a matter of clemency,
that's not my question. If the convening authority, if there's an allegation of a legal error at trial,
yes, sir,
and the convening authority decides to moot that issue by dismissing the charge, doesn't make any finding as to whether there's a legal error or not, how can the convening authority preclude the defense from arguing that its sentence was prejudiced at trial by the presence of this other charge?
That would be a fact-specific question as to whether or not there was legal error in fact, sir.
In this case, the defense had an argument for a new trial. That argument, in the government's view, that argument has never been adjudicated. How can the defense be precluded from getting sentence relief on the new trial if the convening authority dismisses the charge and the defense never has the opportunity to argue that the charge was illegal and therefore the sentence needed to be adjusted in light of the illegal charge?
In this case, I think that scenario is always going to exist when the convening authority has the power to dismiss a charge. That's always going to exist.
No, that's going off of Judge Stuckey's question, it may well be that the convening authority can do whatever the convening authority wants as far as dismissing the charge. That's the convening authority's power under Article 60. But can that then deprive the appellate courts of the ability to determine whether there is legal error warranting different sentence relief?
My argument, sir, would be that if he's acting for clemency, the individual has received clemency. If the individual is acting to cure,
can I reframe it for you briefly? Is the CCA, regardless of this appeal, is the CCA precluded from finding a legal or factual error in this case?
As to the dismissed charge, I would say yes.
Can I ask you?
As the charge was dismissed.
The CCA can't reinstate the charge, but can't the CCA do what it sees fit with regard to the appropriateness of the sentence under Article 66?
I see that my time is up. May I respond?
You may respond. And I believe Judge Ryan has a question. You have an opportunity to respond to her as well.
Again, that's a different analysis that is always there. And that's why I say this prejudice isn't such a prejudice, because the court always has the ability to determine whether the sentence was appropriate. This is a question of whether we're taking a more stringent standard and applying the sales criteria. But the sentence appropriateness can always be done. Yes.
All right, I have a slightly different question for you, counsel. If we disagree with your reading of the SJAR and determine that we believe that it's not providing clemency, but rather talking about a sentence reassessment based on the dismissed charge, would you agree that the staff judge advocate should have informed the convening authority about the sales criteria?
I would, ma'am. Yes.
And would you agree that under sales that that the military judges assertion as to the sentence that he would have adjudged if he'd known that the rape charge had not been included would have been the appropriate benchmark for the committee authority to look to?
I do.
Thank you.
However, if I may just note
that you disagree with that interpretation of the SJAR.
Yes, but additionally, this case involves those statements by that military judge being based off of no analysis of whether that evidence was actually admissible at trial.
Counsel,
there's double hearsay problems all over.
If I could get one more question before you sit down. We're trying to figure out what the intent of the convening authority was here, and it seems to me one of the most logical things to do is look at the action itself. And the action specifically references 1102D and the 39A session, which recommended remitting the reassessing the sentence. It did not in any way reference clemency or the clemency provisions. What are we to take from that?
Well, I think the community authority had somewhat of an obligation to reference the Article 39A that occurred afterwards, because if you read, I believe at the top it's stating, as per the findings found on this date, but then we have post-trial hearings that occurred later. So I think he, by obligation, has to incorporate that those things occurred. And in my sense, I considered everything. My ultimate action is based off the entire proceedings.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have an opportunity on rebuttal.
Thanks.
Counsel for the defense.
Good morning. May it please the court. Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of this court, I am Captain Tiandra Sorrell, and I'm along with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Strickland, represent the appellee, Senior Airman Perez, in this case. Senior Airman Perez asked this court to affirm the Air Force Court's opinion when reviewing the Judge Advocate General's certified issue to this court and determined that the convening authority properly or improperly applied RCM 1107 because he was correcting error. Even if this court determines that the convening authority properly applied RCM 1107, it should still affirm the Air Force Court's findings and sentence because Senior Airman Perez is entitled to be made whole. As alluded to in the government's argument, the pivotal question in the certified issue is, what hat was the convening authority wearing when he took action in this case?
He may be entitled to be made whole, but is he entitled to be made whole by the convening authority?
No, Your Honor. Under RCM 1107C, the convening authority is under no obligation to act on the findings. But in this case, this convening authority chose to do so. And we can determine that that was corrective action by looking at all of his conduct, including the record of trial, the staff judge advocate's recommendation, and the action in this case.
Okay, I'll ask you the same questions I ask the government. Number one, How do we know what was in the convening authority's mind? You can look at extrinsic evidence and say, well, he was acting as this rather than this. But since the convening authority only acts once, and you got a clemency package out there, and you've got this, how can you tell? And number two, I'll ask you the same question I asked the government. How do you square this line of cases, particularly Reed, with the plain language of Article 60, which grants the convening authority unfettered and unreviewable discretion?
Well, in addressing Your Honor's first question, I would say we can determine how he was acting by looking at his conduct. When the government first discovered this information, 22 days after trial, what did they do? They took steps to seek out the truth. OSI investigated and gathered statements. They finally notified the defense. Then the convening authority ordered a post-trial 39A session. He wanted to know whether or not the court-martial he referred, the charges that he referred, were in fact the truth, or at least fair. That indicates that he wanted to know, do I have a problem here, and do I need to do something about it? I'll note, after the post-trial 39A session, summarizing, of course, the military judge says, yes, this was an issue. Yes, it should be fixed. If I had the authority to fix it, here's how I would. I don't. Here's what I recommend that you do. Dismiss the rape charge, and here's the sentence that I recommend you give, because that's what I would have done. Following that, in the staff judge advocate's recommendation, you can see in paragraph 3, the staff judge advocate specifically states there's no corrective action required in regard to the findings of guilt on the assault and disobedience of a no-contact order. He was specific there in saying, hey, we don't need corrective action on these. However, on this rape charge, that's a different story. Findings of guilt of the offense of rape are called into question. And then finally, in his action, he specifically states, consistent with the post-trial 39A session, the findings and guilty and of the charge and specification are disapproved. Looking at all of that information, we can logically and reasonably conclude this convening authority under these circumstances was correcting an error that occurred.
Okay, let's go to my second question.
With regard to Article 60, and forgive me if I ask you to re-ask it. You want to know how to square...
How do you square Reed and this line of cases that seem to bind the discretion of the convening authority when he's, in theory, wearing a different hat with the plain language of Article 60?
Well, I understand you're asking about the plain language, but I do want to note that the purpose of Article 60 and of this convening authority's awesome power to change or to take action on findings is to correct errors discovered when exercising his discretion. And I square that with Reed. If you read coupled with that, correcting error binds the convening authority to applicable appellate rules.
What does 60 say about correcting error in its language?
In the Article 60 language?
Yeah, what does Article 60 say about correcting error?
It says that the convening authority may, but is not required to correct. It doesn't say anything about
it. It doesn't say anything about correcting error. It says the convening authority may, in his sole discretion, approve, disapprove any findings and sentence.
That's correct.
That's what it says.
Yes, Your Honor.
So it says nothing about correcting error.
No, it does not.
So I revert to my question. How do you square these cases with Article 60? I mean, it's one thing to say that an appellate court has to apply a certain standard. It's another thing to say that the convening authority, who has statutorily unreviewable discretion, has to do thus and such, has to follow his SJA's advice, or what have you. How do you square that?
And the only thing that I would point to outside the plain language is the purpose of the statute. And the purpose of this awesome power of the convening authority when he takes action, when he chooses to do something he's not required to do, which is to take action on the findings if he's... The reason that's given is in case he discovers an error using his discretion, here's some power.
Well, but isn't it also to grant clemency, which is not posited on error at all?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it's an awesome power that is basically unconstrained in statute, and we're saying, but convening authority, you're constrained. You're constrained by 1107. Which is a regulation.
I think what it could be saying is if you choose to exercise this authority, then that you're not, you don't have to exercise, then look at appellate guidelines if you're going to do it for this reason.
Thank you.
But it's not in the plain language.
Thank you.
Counsel, let me ask you a slightly different question. In this case, if after the post-trial Article 39A session had taken place and the military judge's findings of fact had been forwarded to the convening authority, basically saying, disapprove all of these things because I have credible information that would meet the standard for a new trial. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Sean. That's what the military judge has determined?
Yes, exactly. Yes, and if the convening authority had basically decided to do nothing and leave the offense of rape intact, what would your client's recourse have been at that point?
A petition for a new trial.
To whom?
Well, under the rule, it would be to the judge advocate general, who would forward it over to the appropriate appellate court, the Air Force Court at that time. But that's what he would be left with. And since the convening authority chose to act in this case, he, for lack of better terms, took that option away from Senior Perez.
Independent of the CA's action, did the CCA find that there was a legal error in this case?
I think in reading their opinion,
putting aside the CA's action,
they never specifically state this is legal error, but it's our argument that it's clear in its explanation of what occurred that they are the actions that occurred in the post-trial 39A session amounted to a legal error. That is, the new evidence showed that the alleged victim perjured herself. And because of that, that actually was an error.
What language would you cite to in particular for a conclusion that the CCA found a legal error independent of anything the CA was up to? You're not required to make that argument. You're invited to make that argument.
Well, I would point to when the Air Force Court says, and I'm looking at the slip opinion on page 4, the central question in this case is whether there was legal prejudicial or whether the convening authority, he's citing the CCA is citing or distinguishing what the question is in this case, and then as it goes through the different case law, its conclusion, although it says there was no error at trial, thereafter new evidence was discovered. The evidence met the criteria of 1210 for a new trial. Then in the last sentence of that paragraph, in the case of Judy's, the action of the convening authority amount to corrective action based upon errors, new evidence rather than action in the form of clemency.
Thank you.
Because it's our argument that this was correcting legal error, that triggered a requirement or an obligation upon the convening authority to at least make a sales assessment. And that is, was there a prejudicial effect on the sentencing authority absent this error? What would he have done if this error had not occurred? In this unique case, we know exactly what the military judge would have done because he detailed that in his findings and conclusions.
Accepting your premise, is the military judge's recommendation binding on the convening authority?
No, Your Honor.
It is not. But he has to go through the sales exercise.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
In making that assessment, he would at least determine if it had an effect, and if it did, what was that effect, an attempt to purge it. The government's reading of 1107E, I just want to note, it's our argument that this is a narrow reading of 1107E in stating that it's only applicable upon remand. I understand that the first sentence is if a superior authority remands, then. However, a liberal reading of the entire 1107, coupled with this court's opinion in United States versus Reed, indicates that the convening authority in this case should have either ordered a rehearing or assessed a sentence not greater than the military judge's recommendation.
Does the defense need to rely on 1107? That is, suppose 1107 didn't exist, and the convening authority endeavored to either correct a legal error or moot a legal issue or simply act on the sentence without saying what the reason was. Irrespective of 1107, would it not be then incumbent upon the Court of Criminal Appeals to determine whether the action taken by the convening authority corrected the legal error?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The CCA has an independent duty to review the case and the actions of the convening authority and determine whether or not there was legal error.
And wouldn't that be the case irrespective of Reed?
Wouldn't
that be the case that is that the Court of Criminal Appeals would have to determine whether the action corrected the legal error, this convening authority's action corrected the legal error, and that responsibility would exist irrespective of 1107 or Reed?
Yes, Your Honor. And my first part of the argument was in direct, I guess, response to the certified issue to this case. However, the Air Force Court, when reviewing this case, regardless of 1107, has an independent duty to determine whether or not there was error and what the committing authority did and how to correct that error. Looking at the committing authority's conduct and the record of trial, it's clear the committing authority was taking corrective action, which required at least an assessment of whether the error had prejudicial impact on the sentence. Clearly it did, and the military judge detailed the impact. As such, the committing authority improperly applied RCM 1107 because he should have purged the prejudicial impact by determining what sentence the military judge would have given, absent the error. The convening authority ignored this obligation as well as what the military judge would have judged. Even if this court determines that the convening authority properly applied RCM 1107, it should still affirm the Air Force Court's finding and sentence. It should still enable Senior Airman Perez to be put in the position he would have occupied absent the error. Since the Air Force Court knew what the sentence would have been had the prejudicial error not been committed, it could ensure a sentence no greater than that which would have been imposed, which is consistent with Sales and United States versus Reed. This court has no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
The Air Force Court did not err by finding that the committing authority took corrective action rather than exercise clemency. As such, the committing authority was required to be guided by appellate rules and placing Senior Perez in the same position had the error not occurred. The Air Force Court did not abuse its discretion by reassessing Senior Airman Perez's sentence, and therefore Senior Airman Perez respectfully requests this honorable court affirm the lower court's findings and sentence as we request.
Does the government have rebuttal?
Yes. In regard to Appellee's contention that there was legal error, nobody has stated what that legal error was in this case. The fact of the matter is, there's just a summary statement by the CCA saying new evidence equals legal error. That is not state of law. Anytime you have new evidence, that's legal error. All we had here was evidence that may affect the credibility of the victim from the rape charge. If we look at the other cases that are cited within both briefs as to what legal error does entail, in Sales, the charges were multiplicious. In Reed, the statute of limitations had run. In Davis, the military judge failed to instruct on the lesser-included offense. In Harris, the military judge precluded the victim's conviction for solicitation coming in. In Jordan, the military judge stated, I committed reversible error. In Bridges, the statute of limitations had run. And in Maxwell, the adultery charge was clearly inconsistent with the ring. That's legal error, because no matter what, it's going to have the same result. The fact of the matter is, appellate court's going to do the same thing, and the convening authority has stepped in. I think the best evidence for that is, let's say that the convening authority had said, okay, let's have a rehearing. Would the military judge have been bound by his prior statements?
Counsel, I'm frankly a little bit surprised by the government's position in this case. I mean, the only reason that this case is in the posture that it is, and this is clear from the military judge's post-trial 39A session, is that he'd already authenticated the record. Okay? And so you have a situation where the military judge that heard the evidence in the case said what he would have done. And the only reason he couldn't do it is because it was with the convening authority. The convening authority was not instructed about sales by his staff judge advocate and thus didn't reassess the sentence in accordance with sales. I don't really understand why the government is coming here today when it's clear what the military judge would have done, where it's clear that the convening authority wasn't fully advised about the law by the staff judge advocate, and coming to us and arguing that what the CCA did under Article 66 is wrong.
Well, ma'am, first of all, the evidence that the judge was making the decision upon, that there's no analysis that would have actually been admissible evidence. That never occurs. So I think there's a problem, first of all, in the analysis done by the military judge.
Well, whether it was admissible or not, doesn't it concern you that those statements were made?
That the military judge, yeah, but my point is, let's say there had been a rehearing. The judge wouldn't have been found. He may have very well been found guilty. That's the difference here. So sort of along with your question that, well, what if there had been a rehearing? There's this presumption that he's been precluded the benefit of rehearing, would have resulted in a dismissal. Dismissal would have resulted in sales criteria. He would have been better off. That's not the case. Had it been a rehearing, he very well may have been found guilty, per even the clemency that notes. One of the reasons we think you should not have a new trial is because he'll likely be found guilty. But the fact of the matter is, he received clemency because he very well could have been convicted had the evidence come out the way it would at a trial. The convening authority acted within his sole discretion, and as it states, he may act for any reason or no reason, and there's a plethora of reasons to act that are not curing legal error. First of all, because there is no legal error, and then secondarily, we can look no further than the clemency request that says a new trial is not appropriate. That would be a clemency request at page 2, paragraph 8. There'll be added expenses. There'll be undue stress on all parties. This is already a year after the original trial. There's a whole bunch of reasons for this convening authority to say, yeah, look, that judge came up with some things that he's going to have problems with. I was just told by the defense counsel about all these issues. I'm going to dismiss this. And that is acting for any reason or no reason, which he's permissible, which has the power to do. And it's clemency. It's not curing a legal error.
And the convening authority also could have said, well, that's very interesting, military judge. I'm going to affirm the findings here. And then the case would have been up on appeal.
And it would have been up on appeal.
And then the issue of new trial would have been before the Court of Criminal Appeals.
True, sir. However, again, the end result would be, even if he got a new trial, it's not to his benefit necessarily. He may get a new trial and very well have been found guilty again. That is the point when it's not acting to cure legal error and it's acting as clemency.
I just think it's concerning that the United States government is so vigorously pursuing a case where it appears that the person was convicted based on possibly perjured testimony. And that's not a legal issue before the court, it's just an observation.
Yes, ma'am. It is the government's contention that the individual received clemency. He was better off at the end of the day because he did not have a rape conviction and he did receive, he was immediately withdrawn from confinement and his confinement time was reduced. For the reasons stated, it is the government's submission that the respectful request that this court would determine that the CCA was incorrect by declaring that there was legal error and incorrect in applying the sales standard. And moreover, they did not apply an independent review as to appropriateness. So therefore, their decision as to the sentence, while they can do an independent review, it was solely based off of their finding that the convening authority had.
And if you're correct, that we would then remand and have them do a due 66 review to see if there are any legal errors in this case?
Not with regard to the dismissed charge, because it would be our contention that was dismissed and not subject to review.
So they would not, back to that, they wouldn't, in your view, even be open to review for appropriateness in light of the dismissed charge?
They would review it in order to determine, based off of the thing he was found guilty of, was the sentence appropriate.
And they're not, and you would preclude them from reassessing in light of the dismissed charge?
if we're using reassess in the sense of applying the sales standard, then I don't believe that that would be appropriate, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. And